First, when you think about birding, you may think of people taking special trips near and far to see special birds, checking cool and rare species off their list. But our next guest says there's another way to appreciate birds. Doesn't have to cost any money, and we can start in our own yards and neighborhoods with some of the local birds we might take for granted. It's slow birding, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you make a point of identifying birds at home or in your neighborhood? Do you have a bird feeder in your yard? Do you spend time watching what goes on there? Do you go to the park with the intention of observing birds? Do you have a list of birds you've seen, hope to see? Do you have ones you watch over time? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Joan Strassman is the Charles Rebstock Professor of Biology at Washington University in St. Louis. Her new book is called Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. Joan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, I'm not a birder myself, Joan, but I got to say, I do like being out and seeing a majestic, you know, bald eagle or sandhill crane or something that's unusual. Slow birding is pretty different, though. Can you talk about the basic idea of what you mean by slow birding?
So slow birding is kind of like slow food, which was a movement started in Italy in response to fast food invading their country. The way I think about slow birding is that there's so much known about the birds that are all around us. If we just connect with them a little more closely, listen to their songs, watch what they're doing, that we can get the kind of enjoyment that some people might get by burning carbon and going many miles away, right in our own yards and neighborhoods.
There are a lot of birds featured in your book, and a lot of them are not, I think, the rock stars of the birding world, robins and wrens and many blue jays, ones we might see all the time. Can you talk about what we can gain, though, if we start watching them and learning about their behavior and what it is those little birds are doing?
So every bird has its story. All of the birds in the book are common in your listening area. And they're just really fun to watch. They fight, they mate, they find a partner often for life. And they just do lots of very cool things that we can enrich our own lives by learning about.
And you feature the work of scientists and bird behaviorists who are, you say, the slowest birders of all, people who really watch birds over a long period of time. What can looking at some of their understandings of birds tell us? How could it inform us and enhance our appreciation of those birds?
Well, I just think there's so many amazing little things that people have figured out. So just to pick one example, right now we've got the dark-eyed juncos have come down from their breeding grounds further north, and they're under our feeders and all around. And Ellen Ketterson at Indiana University and her collaborators figured out that they lose so much weight overnight, it would be the equivalent of a 160-pound person losing 11 pounds just overnight. So isn't that amazing?
That is. We are talking about Slow Birding, a book by that name by our guest Joan Strassman. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you keep tabs on the birds in your yard, in your neighborhood? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Dale is with us in River Falls. Dale, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, who are you watching?
I am absolutely crazy. Ask my family and my neighbors about my work from home project has been studying crows.
Oh, okay. And so you've been working at home for a while. What kinds of stuff are you learning about the crows in your yard?
Oh, don't even get me started. So first of all, I'm learning, you know, it took befriending them and actually getting to a point where we had a certain call that we would exchange, learning tons of things about the things that they love to eat, just crazy behaviors, seeing the mated pairs, et cetera. It's just incredibly fascinating.
Dale, thank you so much for sharing that. A great example, Joan. He's been watching those crows for quite a while. He's doing some slow birding there.
That's awesome. I love crows.
Yeah, and that brings us into the tactics. A lot of your book is suggestions about ways we can interact or observe birds in our backyard. Can you give us a couple starting tips, whether it's Dale's crow friends or otherwise?
So I would start by simply sitting in your backyard, on your balcony, in a nearby park, somewhere that has some natural vegetation, maybe with a cup of coffee or whatever it is you like to drink, and just listen. Pretend you're like a toddler just learning to speak. Try to hear all the sounds that you can. Open yourself to the experience and just try to decide which sounds might come from which birds. Because so often people start at a place that's really halfway through to the learning. I like to start at the beginning with sound, also with observation, but there's just something profound to me about the sound.
Well, let's hear the sound of one of the birds you write about. It also happens to be Wisconsin's state bird. Here is a robin song.
That's lovely.
Now, the story you share, the scientific story, I love this. This is one of my favorite stories in the book, and maybe all of us have thought about it. You see a robin with a worm in its mouth. How do they know these are worms underground sometimes? How do robins find the worms? You looked at some experiments to try to answer that question.
Yes, so they could hear them, they could feel them, they could see them, or they could smell them. And a couple of really fabulous Canadian researchers figured out the roles of all those different senses and found that hearing them was the first thing that robins do.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jed is with us in Couderay. Jed, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Jed?
Call. Well, I want to thank you for taking my call, and I just wanted to share a brief story. When I was a young child, my older brother took me out in the woods, and we sat down. He sat me down, and after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, things really started to reveal themselves to us, including birds. So just in honor of him, and in, you know, you're talking about slow birding, but even just staying put and being comfortable in your surroundings, and definitely to sound as well. But this is from a long line of bird watchers. So peace and love to all birders worldwide and to the birds as well.
Jed, great story. Thanks for sharing your origin story as a birder. And Joan, you talk about, you know, if we're in that position, we're in a backyard or the forest or whatever, you offer a couple different ways to kind of scan the scenery for birds. Can you share a couple ways we can approach that?
Yeah, so these are sort of classic animal behavior techniques where you can't really see everything at once, and that would be called ad lib, where you're just frantically trying to look everywhere and write everything down.
That's me.
And you realize you can't. So there's two other techniques. One is you just pick one bird. You watch that one bird for some certain amount of time. Maybe you take notes. Maybe you just watch it. And then you switch to another. So that would be called focal animal. And then the third technique is called scan sampling. And that is you just sort of look from left to right or right to left and just take a flash picture of what the bird is doing at the very second that you look at it and just tabulate up those for all the birds.
Thanks again for that call. We are talking to Joan Strassman, biology professor at Washington University in St. Louis. She shares many local birds with us here in Wisconsin. We're talking about her new book, Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this you? Do you observe birds in this kind of way? Do you consider yourself, now that you've heard the phrase, a slow birder? What do you see maybe in your backyard or in your neighborhood? Do you go to the same spot again and again and see who's there, what they're doing, what changes over the course of the day, over the course of the year. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Joan Strassman, professor of biology at Washington University in St. Louis. Her new book is Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. And you could join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your own birding experiences or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Karen is with us in Madison. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've been observing ever since, for about 20 years since my dog died, and the squirrel kind of saved my life. So I've been observing birds and animals out my window a lot, and I found that if you're just open to the fact that they want the same things we want, we just, you know, become interspecial. You can see what they do, like a blue jay that flies out of a peach tree and goes up on a wire and rubs its beak. Well, they're using it like a napkin to get the oil off from eating the peaches and things like that. And when little birds are flying through the air like leaves because it's so windy and they're clinging to all my windows, I feel so sorry for them. They just want help.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing that. Karen is clearly a careful observer, Joan, but she also said something I thought was really interesting. She feels this connection with nature through her observations of these birds.
Yes, I think that's a really strong point of a big advantage of bird watching, because the birds are there because they want to be. They're wild. They can leave. They can fly away in ways that we could only dream of. They're just really fantastic to watch.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We'll go to Jim now in Stevens Point. Jim, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Apparently, I've been practicing slow birding for 30 years, although I didn't know it. And I really look forward to a day like today when it's the first snow of the year, because I've been sitting here all afternoon and all morning, and I've had, you know, hundreds of birds. It's been just great. And I went out about halfway through the big feed, and they're all out there chirping and yakking away. So you get that part of the birds when you're out there, whether you're watching, whether you're inside. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that it kind of works toward how you garden, because I've gardened for 30 years in my yard, and I've created, you know, different layers and levels of bushes and shrubs and trees. And it all kind of works, and now they're here. So it's a wonderful thing.
Jim, thanks so much for sharing that. To his second point, Joan, you talk about that in your book, making your yard, your garden more bird-friendly when you can.
Yes, I do. I think hedges and that intermediate level is really important. And also, I'd just like to say that the classic work on Cooper's hawks was done by Bob Rosenfield at Stevens Point.
I was just going to get into that since Jim was from Stevens Point. I want to listen to the Cooper's hawk and let's talk about him a little bit. And you spend some time in your book looking at the Cooper's hawk and that research you just mentioned in Stevens Point. Now, Cooper's hawk, we hear about DDT and bald eagles, of course, here in Wisconsin, around the country. The Cooper's hawk, very, very dramatically cut back in numbers, in part because of DDT. Can you talk about that Wisconsin research you just mentioned based at UW-Stevens Point?
Yeah, so Bob Rosenfield didn't really want to stay there for his PhD, and he hadn't seen a Cooper's hawk ever because they were so uncommon that he imagined they'd be in the deepest, darkest forests. But when he put ads in those little newspapers they used to throw in our yards, he found people were seeing them all over and that they were in suburban areas, and that he actually had no trouble getting lots of Cooper's hawks. And he just did a fabulous study telling all about the Cooper's hawks, how they have plucking point, plucking posts, how they have a long middle toe to snatch birds out of the air. It's just fabulous work. And it's just, I had such a wonderful time talking with him.
Thanks a lot, Jim, for bringing that up and giving us that place reference. That was a nice segue there. We are talking to Joan Strassman, biologist at Washington University in St. Louis. Her new book is called Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. Back to your calls now. Kevin is with us in Eau Claire. Kevin, hi.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I discovered peanuts in the shell this year. And the blue jays' reaction to them has just been incredible. They'll come to the shell feeder and seem to find the very largest one first. They'll pick them up, drop them, get another one. It's just been hilarious to watch. And then also had a Cooper's hawk outside my shop this morning, as a matter of fact.
Oh, nice, Kevin.
The birds all disappeared.
I bet. Kevin, thank you so much for sharing that. You got a Blue Jay chapter. Now, peanuts aren't the only thing they'll pick up and share. Blue Jays may have helped plant oak tree forests around the country.
Yeah, it's just kind of something we don't often think of, that our northern landscapes are only about 11,000 years old. And before that, Wisconsin, Michigan, northern Missouri, it was all under, you know, miles of ice. And so as that ice receded, the forests actually moved north faster than you might think. And for the oaks, evidence is that the Blue Jays had a hand in that.
Yeah, so can you talk about, like, when we see an oak tree and there's acorns around it, some of the studies you reference in the book try to figure out, okay, how many of the acorns end up being snatched up and moved and maybe planted by blue jays? What kind of things are we finding out?
Well, so blue jays are major acorn predators, and they're also really good at picking the right ones. They can carry four or five in their esophagus at a time. They take the caps off. They sort of weigh them and don't take the acorns that might have weevils in them. So if you see acorns under a tree, you might check them out and see which ones you would take, whether there's lots with weevils, how easy is or hard it is to take off the cap. And then just think of those blue jays flying, you know, a kilometer, half a mile or more to cache them somewhere that they could then find them in the winter when there's less to eat.
Thanks for that call. Vivian joins us next in Green Bay. Vivian, hi.
Hi, two comments. One is I have a small urban lot, city lot, and I've planted things for pollinators and birds for the last 20 years. It doesn't take a lot of room. Just learn which plants will provide habitat and food. But we can learn a lot from the birds if we listen. If you hear a flock of crows being really noisy, start looking for a predator such as a great horned owl. I used to walk my neighborhood, and in the city of Green Bay, we have a lot of flat roofs in the commercial areas. Look at drugstore tops, big stuff. I used to hear nighthawks. They're not there anymore.
Vivian, thanks a lot for the call. All right, Vivian gives us a lot to work with, Joan. First of all, I've seen in our neighbor's tree crows freak out one time for an owl and one time just the other day for a red-tailed hawk in the tree. We can use birds as clues to see what else is going on in the neighborhood. Do you have other examples of that?
Yeah, the blue jays are the best signposts, and when they're yelling at something, it might be a very dark, deep tree that's really hard to see into, but sometimes it's worth spending the spending the time to see the, in my neighborhood, it would be a great horned owl hiding in there. And I agree with the caller about small lots. My city lot is only 50 feet wide, and so I've had to make every inch of it count.
Vivian also mentioned noticing changes. Now, one thing we can kind of do to level up our slow birding is to keep, you know, diaries of what we see hear and when we see it. A fellow by the name of Aldo Leopold actually developed a lot of good bird science here in Wisconsin doing exactly that. Can you talk about keeping journals and diaries of our observations?
So I just think it's really empowering to write down what you see and maybe to try to sketch the birds. But my very favorite way to do it is with eBird, and to just log your observations on the free app from Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology. The reason I like eBird is because it is a citizen science project where our observations go into a bigger data set. And it also lets us explore. So I've also noticed I don't see as many common nighthawks as I used to see. And I could go into eBird and just put in, you know, explore common nighthawks, and then try to see if my observations fit the whole world's observations. So between eBird and the free app Merlin, which will identify songs and help you figure out what you're seeing, those two apps are just fantastic.
Joan, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you, and hello, Wisconsin.
Joan Strassman is the Charles Rebstock Professor of Biology at Washington University in St. Louis. We talked with her today about her new book. It's called Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. You can keep sharing your slow birding stories, by the way. If you'd like, you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us ideas@wpr.org.